If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
You're on Reality Check Radio. Oh, I can't get used to saying it. I'm tearing up even just saying that. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde, and we're back into our regular programming. And first up, we've got the wonderful Dr. Sarah Farrant. Have I got that right, Sarah?
I think we might have this every time. Yes, you have, Farrant. Yeah.
I have a break, you see, in there. And her husband, Randall, get this, they have backgrounds in education, psychology, general science, and chiropractic, and they have a global reach in terms of teaching vital well-being and leadership. And they've had best-selling books on Amazon, award-winning non-fiction writer of the year, been to reach 34 countries. Oh, my goodness. How lucky is Reality Check Radio to have you join us, Sarah?
Oh, thank you, Rodney. It's so good to be back on the airwaves with you. I tell you, I couldn't wait to see you this morning.
Well, I got to tell you, I have been nervous.
Oh, why is that?
I always have a thing about, you know, doing a good job.
Mm.
But once we got into the running the station, we're so busy, you just had to keep doing it. And then we had that downtime, which was terribly low, getting it back up. And then I felt the contemplation coming back, this huge trust that had been placed in us. And funny enough, I started off feeling it as a burden, and now I realize it's sort of, I've reframed it as an uplifting thing, that we have such a lot of support. But you know how you get in a groove and then you get out of it? It's like coming back after the Christmas break and you think, oh, how do I do this again?
Yeah,
so I've been
a bit
like that and pushing the buttons.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
Well, traveling again. So with the presentations, so that was fabulous. I was down in Nelson and so over towards, you know, the Collingwood side of the Golden Bay.
I think we say Takaka.
Takaka. Thank you. Takaka. Yeah. Thank you for that correction.
I've never corrected someone's pronunciation in my life before.
Feel free to do it for me.
Then I couldn't get it out.
Yeah, and then so I've been doing that and writing heaps, speaking with people, returning emails, doing what I do, you know, taking care of family, kids, people. So it's been wonderful in that respect. But I've always, obviously, every day I've watched keenly what's happening with RCR, and glad to be back on, and hopefully I played my role. You know,
you did
on social media, and
I want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for that. It's been wonderful, and I say you learn who your friends are when you're down, even if we weren't quite out. Tell me. What, I don't mean this to be a questioning thing, it's like in your mind, what are you travel and you give a presentation, in your mind, what are you achieving with your presentations?
Well, my purpose always is to optimize the health of generations. So, and we do that in three ways, via our direct services being chiropractic, our education, and our food line. So when I'm doing the presentations, my aim is always to help people get an aha moment.
Okay.
And whether that's just one aha and they walk away with like, oh, my gosh, I didn't see, you know, X, Y, or Z in that way, then I'm happy for them. Mm. But I also have, I guess, for myself, this, you know, this underlying part of what just wanting to help people look at health outside of mainstream, because that's what we've done for over 30 years. We've lived outside of the system, right? We don't have an NHI number. I have not partaken in anything to do with the medical system for over 30 years. So not a medication has passed my mouth, and not neither of our children, nor my husband. So for me, it's if a little bit of my wisdom, of my knowledge of what I've known or what I've traversed or what I've journeyed over the last 30 years can help someone in their life, then I celebrate that. And
it's almost incomprehensible that you haven't been to a doctor in years to even me.
It's you know, it's interesting, but it's and I always say to people in the in our presentations, you know, if I can do it and a family of five can do it, then I know you can too. We've just got to unpack, you know, all of those things that we've been taught and what we think health is. And that takes sometimes things can happen like that when people get those aha moments really quickly. And other things, we have to unpack that over time. But as long as we have what I call Kaizen, which is those simple, gradual, and consistent steps towards the change that you want to see in your body, in your life, in your world, in your family, then you're heading in the right direction. We're heading outside of that system that we know is, you know, and people have said it for years, you know, it's a sickness industry. I mean, I was speaking about it back in the 1990s, early 2000s, and I was talking then about this, the system itself is going to implode. It will implode on itself at some point in time. And here we are, it's imploding with more people just totally waking up to
the COVID experience must have been a wake up call to so many people.
I think so. And perhaps, Rodney, although there is such harm that has been done, it's also a silver lining, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I always speak about life is always perfect. There's perfection in everything, positives and negatives in everything. There's great things in things that are great and bad things in things that are great. And there's, you know, good things in things that aren't great and bad things that aren't great. So it's like a magnet. You can't just chop off one end of a positive and negative. There's good and bad in every situation in our life. Mm. And COVID's no different. If we choose to see those silver linings that have brought about this, you know, extraordinary change in the way people communicate, in the way people see things, and the way that we deliver the information. For example, RCR versus, you know, the legacy media now falling on its side.
I am very reluctant to go to a doctor now, and obviously, if I broke an arm, I'd go. But yes. What's your view of checkups? I used to think it was necessary to go and have a checkup, you know, where they check you for cancer and stuff like that. Is that still a good idea?
Well, of course, I've never done, you know, I've not partake in any.
Don't mean to be rude, but you're a very young lady.
No, I'm actually not that. I'm not as young as probably what you think. I might look young, but I'm in my 50s, my mid-50s.
Oh, that's young.
It is young. It is, yeah. all perspective, right? Mm. So I guess it starts with the wisdom of the body. You know, we have everything inside of us in order to be healthy.
So you don't see yourself getting to 75 and having a checkup?
No, because I keep myself consistently and regularly looking out for my health. In other words, I eat well. I'm a chiropractor, so I get adjusted. So I look after the nerve system, which is the master communicating system of the body. And I look at the physical, chemical, and the emotional aspects of my life. So that kind of, for me, is the catch cry. But the overarching part of all of that is that we have an innate intelligence within our body. And if we choose to listen to the whispers that our body gives us, then that can be a guiding,
this is so fascinating, isn't it? Because it's a philosophical point that you look after your own health every minute of every day by your practice, you know, by what you do, how you eat, how you exercise. For everyone else, or for most people, it's like, oh yeah, I just live my life, and then once every couple of years I'll go for a checkup, and you have 15 minutes with a doctor, and he tells you to eat less and exercise more, and probably eat less fat and drink less, and and off you go. Oh, I haven't got cancer, that's great. And that's a philosophical thing of responsibility, where you have taken responsibility for your own health, where the rest of us pass it off to an expert in a way. And that's how we've been brought up. I got a sniffle, I'll go to the doctor and he'll write me a script. And then I'll go to the chemist and I'll get the pills. And that's what you're doing, isn't it? You're turning that on its head to take responsibility for your own health. And even a doctor would have to admit that you eating well and exercising is far, far better than anything he or she can do for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's responsibility, self-responsibility, and responsibility for your family. And that's something that I speak about in the presentations, because if you're going to sit in a paradigm that espouses you being the passive participant in your search for something, then you're always going to be going to someone to get something, to take something away. Mm-hmm. But if you come from the position of you create your health and you are the one that's ultimately responsible for it, then that takes on a whole new meaning for how someone not only interacts with their body, but interacts with themselves in their life. And
how wonderful.
Yeah, I think there's kind of like a valley to cross to get to that side, yeah. But people do, and they can.
You've really got me going, and I know we're going to get on to teeth, but this is such an interesting observation to me and hopefully our community, because even doctors themselves, right, they kick everything upstairs. So you go and see your GP and they send you off to an expert. Don't they? Like, oh, I think you've got this. You better go and see a heart specialist. And then you go and see the heart specialist. Oh, well, we'll need these tests. And it's just all shifting in a way. Oh, I just read the tests, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how the COVID era comes about, because someone else is making every decision and we're just implementing it as a matter of expertise or policy. And it's so clear to me now. Funny enough, I've been building a couple of small cabins. Nice. And it's been so interesting about the building industry, because when I was a kid, a builder would come along to an empty section and start like digging and setting up profiles and laying concrete, and then he'd hand you the keys to your house. Nowadays, a builder turns up and they do one specific thing. And then another builder comes in and does the next specific thing. It's probably a lot more efficient. And then they all work off a very, very detailed plan that's been checked and rechecked through the council and engineers and architects. And then council people come out and building inspectors come out and check their work every step of the way. And when you sit down with a young builder and you say, oh, how do you do this? They look at you, oh, I don't know, I don't do that, but. Or I read the plan. And everything has become like that removal of responsibility. And we've been, with respect to health, daily propagandized that's how we go about health, that health is a checkup, health is the pills you take. Mm. And of course, the pharmaceutical industry has worked diligently to have it that you take pills every day.
And a pill for every year. And that's you know, and this is not recent, right?
No.
And we're going back to the 1800s that was been an assault. And if we go back to the 1850s, at least in America, there was, a guy by the name of Rockefeller who started the Standard Oil Company. And then in the 1860s, he was like, I would like some multiple sources of income. And so he opened refineries and he started making like lubricants and paints and paraffin wax and all of that. And as a result of that became, you know, a major company and a major force and had a lot of money. And then he started to own USA Media. So he suddenly had this monopoly on the media. And then he realized that drugs could be made with petroleum. So he started to patent certain drugs and he started to lobby Congress. And he started to lobby Congress in such a way that anything that was of, you know, natural medicine, those two words should never be put together as far as I'm concerned, but medicine or anything that was of natural origin, he lobbied to have that seen to be unscientific and I my pronunciation, I might need your help here.
Quackery.
Yeah. So he here's this guy. He's got tons of money. He owns the monopoly. He's got a monopoly over the media. He's lobbying Congress to say anything that's a natural source that's going to help the human body express health is unscientific and it's you know, it's crackery. So that's really how it all, this whole demise of, you know, ownership of, no, we're not going to give people that, we're not going to do it. And then all of a sudden people like the chiropractic profession get vilified because we're talking about the nerve system and its integral integration in the expression of human health. And we have been shut down a number of times over the years. And there was a massive law case in the US that we won. Six chiropractors took the AMA, the American Medical Association, to court and won because they were trying to shut down the chiropractic profession because what we do helps people, right? It keeps people alive. You know, on one end, you've got one that, you know, saves your life. And like you said before, if you've broken your arm, then it's a great place to go to. But they save your life, whereas chiropractic gives you life. And they're very, very different.
Wow, it's a great expression. And, of course, Rockefeller, the foundation now, of course, is terrible what it's funding. But
yeah,
Rockefeller himself, I must read up more about him because he did so much that was great, but it must be the power, you know, that story that power corrupts you, because once he got so big, like he couldn't stop. And you can see this with Bill Gates, right?
Absolutely. They used the same PR company to reset himself as a philanthropist. So that's what Rockefeller did as well. So he had this, I'll do good, but, you know, in the back, I'm going to be doing everything I can to destroy and monopolize and control. And under this guise of this amazing philanthropist and such a giver. But when you start to pull away the curtain and have a little peek behind it, it's kind of like, actually, I can see what you're doing, you know, and
business in bed with government is a terrible recipe because they will always destroy the competition and use patents and other legal maneuvers to protect their position.
Yeah.
And we see that right through New Zealand now. Oh, my God, it makes me sick because I'm a free market nut. But what we have now is nothing like it because government is in bed with big business. And small business, which is the engine of a capitalist system, is systematically destroyed. And, of course, it's the same in the health industry where doctors are no longer independent. They have now been corralled into, you know, willingly jumped into it, a system where they're basically employed by the government and told what to do by the government. And then out there you have your independent health practitioners such as yourself, which are literally, I guess like RCR, you know, seen as fringe and demonized because of this big monopolistic government industrial complex trying to run our health for power and profit.
And if they can't close you down, Rodney, they'll do everything they can to regulate you, you know, and you can't talk about this. And, you know, we can't even talk about, you know, someone can't even leave a review on our website. They can't talk. We can't talk about certain things in our practice. We can't have reviews or testimonials. You know, it's just, it's madness.
So you've suffered this your whole career, and you would have learned about it even when you're learning chiropractic.
Yeah.
And so this is, the whole COVID experience in a way was nothing new to you.
No, it was just another fight to be had, really, you know, and as a profession, you know, we, because we're so used to being vilified in ways, we come together so strongly to help fight things and to keep our right to practice, to keep our right to educate, to keep our right to adjust children, to keep our right to serve the people. And that's because, you know, the philosophy, we don't just learn anatomy and physiology and neurology at college. We learn philosophy, the philosophy and the understanding of why we do what we do, that we look at this innate intelligence of the body that has everything to express health, like I've said before. This nerve system is the master communicating system, and the philosophy, the understanding of why we do what we do, to help people change their lives physically, chemically, and emotionally.
Did the COVID era divide the chiropractic industry here in New Zealand? Like, were there some, I imagine it did every industry.
Yeah, I'm probably not the best person to answer that. There'd be other people more qualified to answer that with that kind of observation. Yeah. But like any profession, you're going to get
both poles, aren't you?
You're going to get those that are kind of, you know, medipractice that are, think in a similar vein to a medical doctor, and then you're going to get medical doctors that think in a similar vein to a chiropractor. So you'll get those extremes anywhere. But suffice to say, there was a large number of us that banded together to help the profession.
And presumably,
yeah,
you could be. I mean, how does that work? If I'm your, do you say patient or client?
I say practice member, actually, or a person. Yeah,
client. Okay, or a person. Yeah. So a person's coming to see you and they say, oh, doctor, do you think I should take this vaccine? Are you able to answer that question?
Well, no.
Isn't that amazing in itself?
Mm.
Because you're not registered with the government.
Well, yeah, and again, we are in a way, but it's just, if we can regulate you to squash you to say things, right, then you know what I mean? It's
crazy. And if you
it's madness.
If you are registered with the government to be able to tell someone whether they should take a vaccine or not. If you tell them not to, you're fired. And that's the whole point, isn't it? It's this tyrannical control. And, I mean, it's the same if you're a bloody plumber. You know, everything is so rigid.
Yeah.
And you dare not express a professional opinion counter to what the book says.
Mm.
And the book is written by people who may not have our best interests at heart, may not have experience, certainly don't have wisdom, because if they had wisdom, they would not be writing a book. Oh, my goodness. It's everywhere. You pull that curtain back, it's
yeah.
You pull it back in one place
yeah,
and you assume that everything else is working as it should, and then you realize it's everywhere.
Everywhere. And you know what? My dad, and I think I've shared this before with you, Rodney, he said, find out what everybody else is doing and run like hell in the opposite direction.
Yes.
And it was the greatest saying that he said, and I've instilled that in our children as well. And what's been great for me growing up, having that always in the back of my head, was I've always looked for people who are doing things that are so different. So when it came for me being in the health industry, I went to chiropractic because they were so different. They were vilified. Yeah. They were doing, and I'm like, okay, if they're getting vilified and they're getting so regulated and they're getting squashed, they must be doing something right.
Because if they were wrong, they could be ignored.
They wouldn't care. They wouldn't go after you. But when you're doing something right and you're helping people change their lives, then you know, that would, and it doesn't matter in any area of my life, I've always looked like that. I've always kind of gone, okay, where's that fringe person that thinks differently? That's, and I've always been able to find them. And it's, and wonderful. That leads me to Ben, Dr. Ben Olsen, who has been our family dentist for over 30 years. He's been in the industry for over 50, an extraordinary guy. Now, like, and Rodney, I don't say this lightly, but Weston A. Price was incredible. Ben, just as incredible, if not more so. His wisdom, and that's saying something, right?
It
is. And I have read Weston A. Price, etc. But Ben's knowledge is just incredible. And he's still practicing today.
Let's talk teeth.
Oh, let's talk teeth. Okay, let's lead into that. So when, I don't know, like when you were young, I'm sure this happened with you. When you were young and your baby teeth came through, I imagine parents don't usually think much of it. It's not really until you get to that 5, 6, 7 age where you're losing the baby teeth and your more permanent teeth come through that people are like, wow, you're a big girl now. You're a big boy now. And I remember my aunts used to say that, oh, you're a big girl now. And then I'd put my baby tooth in the water and put it on the windowsill, hoping this tooth fairy would come and give me 5 cents or 10 cents at the time.
Yep.
And nothing was really celebrated. So when we brought kids into the world, we wanted to celebrate these milestones. So Ben, Dr. Ben would, when we were younger, he called the baby teeth, and I love this visual, pioneering plants.
Wow.
And I was like, and that's what I would say, like, wow, that's really interesting. And I'm going back, you know, 24, 25 years now.
So Dr. Ben is a Kiwi in New Zealand?
No, he's an Australian. So he's actually my husband's cousin.
You use a dentist in Australia?
Yeah. So we were living in Australia before we moved to New Zealand. Yeah. And so every time we would go back to have family, we would go in and see him to for, you know, oral hygiene, oral teeth.
Yeah.
And so when our kids had their baby teeth coming through, in our last conversation we spoke about fevers, and I got a few emails after that, I don't know if you did, but with people saying, wow, I didn't know that the teeth scissor. And I thought, well, that's what brought me to speak, want to chat about teeth today, because I thought that would be a good thing to talk about. So the baby teeth, when they come through, scissor up and down, and they ever so finely, precisely will cut the skin as they're coming through. And that's when I was talking about, you get a fever as it gets closer to being cut, so we increase that temperature so we can sterilize the environment. And then the baby tooth then erupts. For us, when the first tooth came through, we would do a celebration for our kids, because this is a time of great celebration. It's no different to a child reaching puberty for the first time. And so for us as a family, we would make our favorite cake. Not that the kids would eat it, but myself and my husband would eat the cake, and we would just have a celebration because we would note the changes that were taking place. So I've always said to families when I'm working, you know, working with them, or they email or call for questions, then never give a child solid food prior to that first tooth coming through. That's really important. For us, we breastfed our children for almost exclusively for the first 12 months of their life. We breastfed for 2 years for each child. And when the tooth has erupted, changes take place within the body. So it's called pepsinogen. So pepsinogen is released in what's called the chief cells of the stomach lining. And when this pepsinogen combines with the hydrochloric acid, so the acid that digests foods within the stomach, when it combines, it makes an enzyme called pepsin. And pepsin is what is used to digest proteins. Prior to the eruption of that tooth, there is no pepsin within the stomach. So giving the child proteins before that tooth has erupted is something that I just do not advocate for.
And, of course, mother's milk has the enzymes within it to digest the protein.
Has everything, you know, the mother's milk has the protein that the baby needs. It has the whey, you know, obviously the whey being the protein. It has the fats that it needs, etc. And remember, a child's stomach, if we clenched our fist, a child's stomach is the size of their fist. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tiny in compared with what they can consume. So the importance there is looking then at diet, which is paramount when the child is, you know, is growing through these, you know, first, you know, couple of years, 3 years of life. It's very, very important in the first 3 years of life. So a lot of parents think that, oh, my child's not getting enough to eat. They're always wanting, or they're grabbing for what I want. Like, let's say the child is at the table with them and they're having dinner and the child's trying to reach for something. Well, the child's trying to reach for something more so because it wants to gnaw the gums. So just like the teeth on the inside scissor up and down and cut, something needs to also be able to cut from the top going down. And so we would give our children a wooden toy. It was actually from the Steiner store, and it was a wooden rattle that they would be able to gnaw on that would help with the development of the jaw and the development of the teeth coming through. And then one of the things that we used to get asked a lot was, well, what do you do with brushing your children's teeth? Because everyone's like, oh, that tooth comes through, we've got to get a brush and we've got to brush the tooth. Well, no, we really didn't introduce a brush to our children until they were, maybe 2-3 years old. Mm-hmm. So they were breastfeeding, like I said, exclusively for that period of time. But then we would do a water rinse in their mouth so that all the, you know, the lactose or the sugar of the breast milk was not sitting on their teeth. But we never brushed their teeth. When they started to get more teeth in their mouth, then we would use our finger to move over their teeth. And it wasn't until around that age of 3 that we would introduce a brush, more so to create the habit of cleaning their teeth than necessarily anything else. So these baby teeth, if I go back to that for a moment, are so important to the development of us into adulthood. So just like we have in the first 7 years of life, we look at the people talk about these informative years, and then they might talk about the development years. Well, there's also this oral development that's really important. So these baby teeth that Dr. Ben refers to as the pioneering plants are the ones that steer the ship, so to speak, for the adult tooth to come up behind it. Mm-hmm. So if they're growing well, then we know that the adult teeth are going to be placed well in the jaw as well. And as Dr. Ben says, and I totally concur with, is that these baby teeth vibrate at a higher frequency than what the adult teeth do. And that this frequency, this vibration that these baby teeth have, energetically follow a meridian line to certain organs. So organ health then is really important. Our teeth can paint a picture of our health. So when we, I've always said to parents that if a baby tooth, if a child's getting to that 5, 6, 7 age where teeth are starting to fall out and the adult tooth is starting to come through, then do not pull the tooth out. Don't pull the baby tooth out. Don't, you know, tie the string and slam the door or try and yank it out. Just let it fall out, because once the tooth has energetically made and completed the connection with the organ, the tooth will fall. And the adult tooth then comes through. So, for instance, let me give you an example. The eye teeth that we have at the front, also called the canine teeth, they're related to the liver. Now, the liver emotionally represents anger, or it can represent frustration. Anger, maybe 90% of the time, 10% of the time, frustration. But joints-wise, it's also related to the ankles, the knees, and the hips. So the knees, the ankles are about taking next steps. The knees are about support, and the hips are about relationships.
Now, just back up the truck.
Yeah.
Because this seems to me weird. Your canine teeth,
yep,
somehow out of my whole body relate to my liver.
Mm-hmm.
How?
So that's through, and people can look up meridians. So there are all of these meridians in the body, and traditional Chinese medicine is a big proponent.
So this is acupuncture and
meridians in the body. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have this frequency of the canine teeth going to the liver. The wisdoms are going to the heart. The ones at the incisors at the front, you know, are more bladder and kidney. So there are these different meridians everywhere through our body. Everything is connected. And then when we start
and
to
this meridian idea, or these meridians, this is how when you're a chiropractic or when you're doing acupuncture, you might be putting the needle in or rubbing something quite remote from where the issue is, because you're working on that meridian. Have I got that understanding right?
That would probably be in acupuncture, but in chiropractic, okay, we look at the spine. So,
okay. These meridians are ancient medical wisdom.
Handed down to us,
hundreds of years, are sort of invisible to our anatomy. They exist as a frequency or as something that's moving through our body that we only dimly understand.
Yeah, well, I think probably, you know, there's lots of people that have taken deep dives into this area, of course, but and others that are going to be new to this. But the makeup of the body is all energy. You know, we are energy. Yes. If we take that deep dive like we have on different conversations, and we go from systems to organs to tissues to cells to organelles to molecules to atoms to subatomic particles to vibrations to energy and light. And light, when we break it down, has that positive and negative charge. So it's all about energy, frequency, etc. When we look at the makeup of our body, it makes sense then that our teeth, like everything else, is going to be connected energetically to different organs in the body. And the point I want to make of this is that it makes going to a dentist completely different than I'm just going to have my teeth checked. Because if someone's got, you know, challenges with their canine teeth consistently, then you have to ask the question then, well, what's going on with the liver? And the emotions that are attached with the liver is anger or frustration. So we've got to ask those questions. Well, where's the anger in your life? Where's the frustration in your life? But also then we want to look at the ankles and the knees and the hips. And one of the big changes that I see with kids when they come into the practice around this time when they are losing their baby teeth and the adult teeth are coming in is because they've done their physical growth and they're going into their chemical growth, they have this change in the way they are in their body. And you've probably noticed that through your kids as well, that suddenly Yes. Their arms can become really long and their legs are really gangly. Yeah. And all of a sudden, kids that were quite coordinated all of a sudden are not as coordinated and might be tripping over their feet. And we've had lots of people over the years that have come and we've looked at, different aspects of their body, physically, chemically, and emotionally. And then they've spoken about their teeth. And we're like, well, one thing that you really want to look at if you're looking at the clumsiness or the feet is that you want to go and have their teeth checked. So there's a direct relationship between what's happening with the changing in a child's gait and actually what is happening in their mouth. And, that's been really important over the years to help families.
So Dr. Ben gets all this.
He's amazing. Yeah, he's, and most of this I've learned from him over the 30-odd years that I've been with him. So just as a disclaimer, I know we're late into our conversation, but I'm not a dentist and I don't claim to be. I just want to share the wisdom that I have come to know that have helped us, steer our children. And the other thing too, Rodney, is that when we look at the mouth intelligently and when we see that, the different organs are associated with different areas, then it makes us look at our diet as well. And the diet is so important. Our saliva, it carries these immune qualities, right? All of our immunity starts pretty much in our mouth with our saliva. And it also has to do, what we create in our mouth through our saliva also has to do with our gut and everything that all the microorganisms that sit within our gut. So our biome, which we know is something that lots of people talk about, which is basically your gut flora, like how good is your gut flora? And that's going to have an impact on your digestive system and the quality of the saliva that you make for oral health. As well. So, making sure that you have got a good diet, probiotics, et cetera, in there, then that's going to be important for the production, the good production of, not production, quality of saliva in the mouth.
It's a beautiful thing we have, our body.
It's amazing. It's extraordinary.
Mm.
And look at it. So, if we choose to look at it intelligently, if we choose to listen to the whispers that it gives us, if we choose to acknowledge that, we are far greater than the sum of just the parts of our body, that we in its collectiveness, we have this intelligence that runs our body and continues to give us the messages. But over the years, we've lost the wisdom of being able to see and acknowledge the messages that our body is giving us.
And, of course, as we learn more and more or understand physics even from 100 years ago, we realize there's a lot more to materials, as you say, light and energy. And so the complexity of the body and the interaction of the body makes this idea of just looking at a liver in isolation or this part in isolation, it makes it look ridiculous. You must look around at kids in a shopping mall at the bus stop with some pain because they're so poorly fed and they're sick nowadays, aren't they?
Mm.
And you must see that so clearly. And you realize through your own children and the people that you help's children how different life could be for them.
And I guess I don't look at them with, with pain or with sadness. I do have this, I guess, optimistic outlook that
You're on a mission.
we're all on this journey, and we're all here to experience things, understand things, make changes in our life, accept things. And as a result of that, when the teacher's ready, the student appears, and when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And I'm a true believer of that, in terms of things will come into our life when we're ready and open to receive that. And a certain portion of people will not be open to doing that. They'll just do life the way it's always been done, and other people will question and want to seek answers in different, in different ways and in different areas.
When you're speaking of these things to young parents, how do you handle it not being too intimidatory? Oh my God, I've got to worry about my kids' teeth. Oh my God, what am I doing? Oh, it could be affecting their liver. Oh, the incisors looks crooked. You know what I mean? That we so
Talk too
want the
much
best
too
for our
soon, kind
children.
of
We
thing.
sort of we read a book and, oh gosh, I've got to worry about this. Oh my goodness, where are they with their maths? Oh my goodness, these first 2 years are so important. Oh my goodness, I've got to get to work. And we've been living in a system where they just go and see the dental nurse at school and that's teeth done, tick, right? And so I'm a hypochondriac, I guess, but I start thinking, oh my God, I did my kids wrong. Oh, I should have done this. Oh, I never rubbed my fingers over their teeth. I never rinsed their mouth. Oh, I'm a bad dad. How do we, and me, you get stressed, which is good for your health. How do we get that balance right as parents living in the world where our world, because we have to work and provide for our kids, isn't just about health. Like, can we fit it all in? We don't have your knowledge. We don't have your experience. We don't have your deep understanding that gives you the confidence of the right thing to do. And so we just go to the doctor and send them off to the dentist. You know what I mean? Because I think this is part of the trap we're in, isn't it? That we're just so busy that we farm everything out. And what you're saying is, oh, we need to take responsibility for this, which I get. We need to be armed with information, which I get. That we have to go back to natural ways, which I get. We have to do this understanding, which I get. Oh, and we have to homeschool because, the schooling's so bad, which I get. And we'd love to do all that, but we're struggling just to keep our head above water.
And I really hear that, Rodney. I hear how people can get caught up in guilt, perhaps, if we want to call it that. The difference is, with you and I here, like, I'm giving you a lot of information in a short period of time, because we're only together once a month, right? So you're getting kind of like, almost like slapped around, maybe slapped around with it.
I feel a bit like that. I feel like a derelict dad.
No, and I don't, I you know, and that's not my intention at all. My intention is to, share in
I'm
part what
sorry.
I know, part the wisdom, and hopefully people will pick up on something that will help them
Oh,
in
it's
their
so
life.
wonderful. I love it. I love it. But it's
But
such a big head shift, isn't it?
when people come to me, and, like, say I do a one-on-one with them, then they're ready for answers. They're ready for that Pandora's box to be opened slightly. And I look at that physical, chemical, and emotional aspect of it. So I get them to, write some things before they come, and then we can expand on that. So it's not like I go, "Oh," and then here it all is in one hit, and now you've got to go and
Well,
do
keep
that.
going on teeth because I'm sure that teeth are, because if you've read Weston A. Price, you know what a great market teeth are. But I had never dived this deep and seen this degree of teeth. Tell me more about teeth.
Well, I think, and Weston Price was onto it, right? All those years ago. I mean, he was such a, he was so extraordinary. And I think if we take it that one step further, and that's where we see this gut dysbiosis at the moment, which is a fancy name for, you know, problems with your gut, or your gut not functioning well. And we see that with the medications that get put into the body, whether that be antibiotics, whether that be vaccinations, we see the gut flora change as a result of the chemicals that are put into it. And and that starts obviously from birth all the way through to, you know, from the cradle to the grave, as the saying goes. So making sure that we're taking care of, you know, great nutrition, no refined foods, you know, sugars when children are young, going through those baby teeth especially. You know, so for instance, if every Saturday we used to have apple pie with our kids, and actually, to be truthful, we still do. It's like a regular in a household. Every Saturday night, it's mum or dad's homemade apple pie. And the way in which we make it is very simple. And when the kids were young, because there was enough, you know, sugars within the fruit, we would just sweeten it with cinnamon. And just have, you know, a very simple pastry sheet. So when I say pastry, it's we don't do wheat or anything like that. So it was made with the buckwheat. So making sure that you can still have wonderful foods, you're just not making it with the refined sugars. You're using what nature already has there in order for you to utilize great food. So taking care of their diet was really important for us. Organic food was really important for us. And, you know, you always hope as a parent, don't you, that you're instilling those great values and ways of life so that when they do become adults, that they are going to be making the right choices for themselves when they, you know, get older or move out of home. None of us as of moved out of home yet, but I think they've made it too good for them with the with the food and stuff that we have. But as a result of what we've done with our kids, being that, you know, understanding that these baby teeth have a higher vibration and their meridian frequencies are joined to different organs, not pulling out teeth before they're meant to be to come out, just allowing our innate intelligence to have them fall out. And then taking care of their diet and looking at them physically, chemically, and emotionally, and above all, making sure that we have or they had regular adjustments, chiropractic adjustments for nerve system, you know, integrity. I think we've spoken about that quite a bit. Has led them now to be 21, and our eldest boy has only got one filling. Our next boy, who's 19, has no fillings at all, and our third, who is 17, has no feelings either. So that's no mean feat to be able to get your child through that length of time without any feelings. And when we do go to see Dr. Ben, we have no like for myself and my husband, we have no medications. They're not numbing our teeth to to put a filling in or anything like that. We just nothing. We want to be present to everything that happens within our body. And he's so gentle and so specific that it's, you can have that with Dr. Ben, not many others. And also we don't have fluoride, you know, as we know, that's a big conversation now, isn't it, around the whole indeed. Of New Zealand.
I didn't know whether to ask you that because it's sensitive. What's your view
on it? It's highly toxic. It's a neurotoxin. It creates havoc with the immune system and your gut, and you just wouldn't want to have that in your body. It's you know, and Dr. Ben concurs with me too.
and medicating, I mean, putting it in the water supply is mass medication of something that's not good for us.
Yeah, I wrote an article on our website, vital-wellbeing, and if you go to the blog, and it's literally called mass fluoridation, mass medication, and it's horrendous. It really, I don't believe the science is conclusive on it whatsoever, and it really, taking care of your teeth goes back to diet. It's as simple as that. And making sure that you are looking after your gut health.
And what about adults and their teeth?
Well, same thing. It's a window. It's a window to the health of the body. So if there are issues going on with any of the teeth, and people can go and look this up as well, you know, where are the teeth connected to what organ, then it really does make going to the dentist a whole different way of looking at yourself, right? Yes. You know, it's just another window to have a look into what might be going on internally within your body, physically, chemically, and emotionally.
Dr. Ben is your husband's cousin.
Yes.
So what led him to be this amazing person? Do you know?
I don't. I think it's always been in him. I mean, he's married to an extraordinary woman.
Do you think Ben would come on our show?
Absolutely.
I'd love it for you to arrange that.
You will love him. Everyone will
follow. I love him now.
Jamie's not here in New Zealand, but for those people that are living in Melbourne and tuning in or fly into Melbourne for family, then please, you know, by all means go and look him up. So just to clarify that point, sorry, Ronnie, Ben is married to my husband's cousin.
Okay,
got it. So he's our relative by marriage, I guess is what you're saying. Yes, that's but an extraordinary human being.
Well, you are an extraordinary human being.
Oh.
No, because, I mean, we never rate ourselves. We tend to see how short we fall. But you're amazing, and you have a great wisdom and knowledge and experience, but more particularly, you can explain it so well and with such a passion that we really value it. Now, I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You're a high-performing person. You're driven. You have this huge success. You have to always be up because you're doing your presentations and you're coming on RCR and you're meeting people. You always have to be up. Are there times when you just go, oh, I've had it?
Yes. Yeah. I'm human like everybody else.
Yeah, because, well, you see, it's very easy in this curated age of media and social media in particular to not see that humanness and the frailties and the downtimes because everyone's up, 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 up. Look at me, aren't we amazing? Oh, I'm amazing. So how does it affect you when you just get overwhelmed and you're not up, you're down?
How does it affect me? That's a really good question, Rodney. I would say in productivity, you know, doing things, because I'm always, like you say, I'm always doing something. And then I just feel like I want to go and sleep, but I know I hate sleeping during the day or doing anything like that because, you know, it's a bit like I have, what is it called? FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, what am I going to miss out if I do a nap or something? But, the downtime for me, like I get up in the morning at 5:30. I'm at the gym. I work out. I come home. I'm into my day by 7:30. Sometimes I don't finish till 8 at night, but a lot of that during the day is sitting. So, you know, like yesterday I was kind of like, you know, need some time out, and so it was a great day and I took myself off for a 10k walk and just was in the sun, and ironically I was listening to RCR replays. I think yours was one of them from the other day, but yeah, it's not easy when you are driven to have that time out, and I feel as I'm the older I get, the better I'm getting it at self-preservation and making sure that I do have that mental time out, because it can get all time consuming. And I think because, you know, I've you know, work and then online education, presentations, traveling, writing, and then, you know, I got three kids in there as well, and a husband, and so I and you know, maintaining a house, you know, all those kinds of things that we all have impacting in our life in some way, shape, or form.
The thing that interests me about all of this is that you can be managing and busy and doing a lot of things, and then it's a bit like the straw that breaks a camel's back. One thing comes along extra, and you feel as though your life almost falls apart because it's just, you can't cope, you know, oh gosh, I've got to do this. And like just getting the kids to where they need to be, making sure they've got what they've got to have in their bag, all these things are occupying. And I'm always, I guess it's this. It's this questioning of our modern age, because it sounds terrible to say when I grew up, but traditionally, men did the money and they did the thing. They drove the truck or went and sat in the office and they met people and they sold things. And mum's role was to nurture and provide for the kids and do all what you're talking about. And I guess what I'm alluding to is that we now look at mums and we've liberated them so they too can work like dogs. And now we say, oh, and you've got to nurture your kids and worry about their teeth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, my mum could nurture three kids and cook for them and clean and care for them and be there when we came home from school and be present. Because when I grew up in the 60s, I never knew a mum that worked.
Yeah.
Not one mother worked. You'd go to your friend's place and mum would be there with afternoon tea. And so this is when I think of you traveling around and writing and working and you got a big, big job on your hands, a big, big responsibility. But that's what we expect women to do now. Anyway, it's a sidebar to historic.
No, it raises a really good question about, you know, feminism and family values now. I think I was blessed because I could be at home. You know, myself and my husband are in the same line of work. We had our private practice and we home educated our kids. So there was always a mother, father present. And we made the agreement before we brought kids into the world so that we both would be parents. That we wouldn't have one that would predominantly do. Although in the latter years, probably I was the one that did more and he was in the practice more as my other work was taking off. So,
but of course, here's the thing too, is when we're looking at being parents and providing for their health and their teeth, if anything is good, that's on the right way. So it's not about getting it perfect. It's about doing better, and a better breakfast is a good start. Better dinner for them is a good start. We can all manage that. We can all think about what we're giving them for lunch. And then we can start adding bits. And we can get to 80%, right, which is a huge difference. I guess I'm an 80% guy when I think about what I've done for my children. I've never made 100. And oftentimes you're beating yourself up for that 20. But just you're doing a good job as a parent if you're getting the kids a good breakfast, a good lunch, and a good dinner, and watching the snacks, you know, what they're eating. And then, you know, you've got the online, you're managing that. That's 80%. And then you start looking to optimize and do the 20%. So you do, because it's very easy to look at you, Sarah, and say, well, you're like Elon Musk. We can't imagine managing like you manage. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I'm in his caliber.
No, but you know what I mean? You're like, you look at Elon Musk and you think, oh my goodness, that's impossible. That's not human.
Yeah.
But we see that, and oftentimes the people that are trying to help us are a bit intimidatory because they're so amazing. And, oh, I could never do that. And what we have to do is to remind ourselves that, yes, they're human too, and they have their frailties, and they may not be showing it to you.
Yeah.
But what we have to do is just do better.
Mm.
Do better for our kids. They might be 16. Well, we can do better for them when they're 16. It's not like, oh, I didn't do that when they were two, therefore I give up. It's a well,
and maybe a reframe on that, Rodney, is do it differently. Because if yes. we say to ourselves, do it better, it implies that we haven't been doing a good job. And you have been doing a great job, and you are a great dad, and you are, I believe you are at 100%, because everything is always perfect. There's always that silver lining.
Isn't that a wonderful view on life?
About everything. So I would say that we all have this opportunity to be different. We all have this opportunity to change in the way that we do things. And so rather than have a better or worse scenario, which just lays down foundations of guilt, then why don't we just say, oh, I can do it differently. I'm going to do it different today, or I'm going to change it today, or whatever. No, but they're two of the really, I think, most powerful words that we can use in our.
That reframe idea is a very important one, isn't it? About how you think about making adjustments, doing things differently, is just reframing how you're doing it. So it's like going to the dentist and saying, this isn't pain.
Well, and know? That takes us, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that brings us to that, what I said before about Kaizen, you know, that started in the Japanese automotive industry, that those small, simple, gradual steps towards the change that you want to see and the change that you want to be. And I think what you've given for me, Rodney, which I'm really grateful for, is that, you know, I never want to put myself on a pedestal. I never want to put myself above anyone.
Now you're perfect. No, I'm teasing you.
Well, there is perfection in that, but I don't want to be seen by that as people, because if someone puts you on a pedestal, it won't be long before they put you in a pit. And no. I don't want to be that. I just want to share my journey, and this is what it's been for
us. It's so wonderful.
And whilst we've had challenges along the way, absolutely. It's the way in which we've handled those challenges, or the conversations we've had, or how we've navigated something that has made the difference to where we are now. And if I can impart some of that with people, then, you know, I'm really grateful for that opportunity.
I'm not a fan of Nike, of course, but I love their motto. Just do it.
Yeah.
Because so often, and I end up overthinking, overreading, over researching. And then you think, just do it. And of course, what happens when you just do it is, of course, mistakes occur, but you fix them as you go, and you make adjustments, and you do things differently. And,
well, I guess the aeroplane can't course correct when it's standing still.
No, that's absolutely
right. You have to be flying in order to be able to make
it. And so where it's a great lesson for us is, whatever it is, it's a bit like gardening, and you get talking to Wally and, oh, God, I've got to do this in the garden. I've got to do that and I've got to do that. But you can just do it. You can just go and grow some potatoes. You can grow some lettuce, and you can grow some tomatoes. None of that's hard.
Yeah.
And it's just like improving your trajectory, doing things differently. Just do it. I've been talking too much, but it's
well,
exciting.
Well, actually, speaking of talking, Saturday, May the 18th, we're on tour again.
Oh, great.
And I start in Timaru, and I'm doing six cities in 6 days. Timaru, Oamaru, if I'm pronouncing that right, Rodney.
Yep.
Oamaru, Dunedin, Invercargill, Tiarnau.
Yeah.
That one, and then Cromwell.
I will be at Cromwell for you.
Yay!
I will meet you at Cromwell. Oh, yay. I'm so looking forward to that, because Cromwell is half an hour from where I live.
Fantastic. Oh, great.
And
we'll come across.
And everyone's coming down here. It's quite wonderful. So how do you, just quickly, how do you organise these tours? Like, how do you work places to stay? Not places to present. And how do you get people to come along? How do they learn about it?
So we have the places on our website.
Yeah.
But I have gone through Voices for Freedom actually asked me to do the presentations initially.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So
you tap into their network and people come along.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. And so they had asked me to do some in Auckland, and then it kind of just catapulted from.
How wonderful.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
so. Oh, well. Well, now your webpage is Vital Wellbeing.
That's vital-wellbeing or vital-wellbeing.com.
Vital-wellbeing. If we're down in the South Island, you come along to Cromwell, I will be there. You're very inspiring, and I didn't mean to be a bit negative, but I wanted to just ask you about how tough it is for people hearing the next thing we need to be doing. But I think we covered it quite well in the finish. I talk too much, but it's the excitement of being back on with you. Next time we have you on, I can't wait, but I'll let you do more of the talking because I feel as though I only got 50% of what you know that you could have shared with our audience. But we got there. Sarah Farrant, what a wonderful person, aren't we blessed? Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you, Rodney, for having me yet again. I'll look forward to when we next chat.
Oh, can't wait. Oh, my goodness, isn't she amazing? It's just, why don't we hear this stuff? Why don't we hear this stuff? And it's because the old legacy media, their model is to take advertising. And if you're taking advertising, you're taking it off the food industry, you're taking it off the pharmaceutical industry, and I was going to use a rude expression, but you can't sort of make a mess in your own backyard. And if you're looking at people eating well, and looking after themselves and listening to their body, that's not a profitable business model for a large corporate. And so there you have it. And we're denied this knowledge and we're denied this insight, but more insidiously, we've been propagandized to how we should live. And it's when, oh, I'm a bit sick, I'll run off to the doctor and he'll give me a script. Or, oh, it's that time of year again. Oh, I better go off and get checked up and see that I'm not dying of cancer and have my doctor tell me I need to eat less. But what Dr. Sarah tells us is just make these adjustments in how we live each day and you'll be healthier and better. It's not hard. Send me a text, 2057. Email me inbox@radleycheck.radio. We're back. Oh, I can't say that enough.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.